Good afternoon. Welcome to the Stretch On Podcast. Kevin Nelson coming at you. All-Star break. Been a minute since I recorded my last podcast. I feel like I say that a lot, but life gets in the way in a good way. Life is busy. Life is good. Doing my best to stay consistent with this. I guess we'll change the name to this podcast from the Stretch On Podcast to the Consistently Inconsistent Podcast. but I'm glad to record something. We're at the All-Star break for Major League Baseball, halfway point of the season. We're past 82 games, and we are at the midseason mark for horse racing. Opening day today, July 11th for Saratoga Racetrack, the summer place to be, a very special place in my heart, personally. I'll touch on that. But it's funny, I actually recorded a podcast on the 4th of July. I was about 31 minutes in, and something just went kaput on my recording device here on my phone, and I lost the 31 minutes of recording. I got a half hour of my life I'll never get back. Didn't get mad. I just said, hey, it just wasn't meant to be to put that out there. So I'm back a week later, literally a week later, because it was 4th of July. I did that on here July 11th. And I'm just going to get right into it. You know, it's the All-Star break, opening day, Saratoga. But before I talk about All-Star break, and I'm not going to talk much about the All-Star game. I really don't care about it. I will talk about one snub that I felt like was unjustified. It actually has to do with the New York Met, who got the selection when I felt like it was somebody else that deserved it. So it's not about any Mets that were snubbed. But talking Mets and kind of going, I love to talk about, you know, the evolution of pitching in the game and guys that pitch, guys that don't have to throw 100 miles an hour. And there's a guy that's been in the major leagues now for, oh, geez, over like 14 years. It's about that many years. Maybe it's 11 years. But Jose Quintana, he's a lefty on the Mets. He's in his mid-30s. Jose Quintana has never thrown over 94 miles an hour. He's got a rising fastball that moves, but he's got a great changeup, great curveball. Very, you know, he used the word crafty left-hander, you know. And his name was brought up a few times just because when we talk about, you know, the MLB draft is coming up this weekend as well. And, you know, you talk about guys like scouts, they look for velocity now in pitchers. And Jose Quintana is a guy that probably would never have gotten drafted or gotten a chance to get a shot with a major league organization these days with the way he was back then, because he doesn't throw hard. And it's all about velocity these days still and chasing velocity. Well, Jose Quintana is showing that you can get major league hitters out without throwing 100 miles an hour. And he's now gone two straight starts for the New York Mets where he's gone seven innings, has not given up a run. He's actually the first Mets pitcher. Now, granted, both of these starts have been against the Washington Nationals. One starting in Washington, and the next start was at Citi Field two nights ago against the Nationals again. He's the first Mets pitcher to have back-to-back shutouts against the same team of seven-plus innings or more in both starts. I mean, Tom Seaver never did it. Dwight Gooden never did it. Nolan Ryan, Matt Harvey, you name it, some of those, you know, better pitchers that have come to the Mets organization. So I thought that was a pretty cool stat. Now, are the Nationals this bump, you know, this bombing lineup? No, but they're still a major league lineup. You know, they're still part of the 700 best players in the world. So, and he did it, Jose Quintana, without throwing 100 miles an hour. He was starting guys off. You know, his location was first pitch strikes with curveballs, and that would set up his changeup away. And then, yeah, his fastball, that's 93-94, looks 96-97 with that rising action that it has on it. So he plays his fastball off the off-speed stuff. And it was a real pleasure to watch. Again, yes, I'm a Met fan, but I don't care if he was pitching, for the Colorado Rockies. That's just a lot of fun to watch. And I heard an interesting tidbit during the game that Quintana himself went to the Mets pitching coach, Jeremy Hefner, and their pitching coordinator and their analytics guys. So, you know, these guys warm up in the bullpen, and there's like three different cameras on them, you know, tracking, you know, spin rate, velocity, and, you know, even when they do their bullpen sessions in between starts, they're tracking all of this data. And then the pitchers get this data, and they try to work on it. And Quintana said he came, he just came clean and said, listen, and he wasn't successful in his past six or seven starts prior to these last two starts, where he was going more at the analytics, trying to chase the spin rate, not throwing hard, but chasing the spin on his breaking ball. And he wasn't able to locate it. And that's going towards pitch shape. And I talked about the pitch shaping and, you know, these older guys, pitch shaping is not going to work. So what Quintana did was he said, listen, I want to go back. I don't want to look at the analytics. I don't care if you record me, what you have to do, but I'm not looking at it. I'm going back to what made me successful all these 10 plus years in the major leagues. That's spotting my pitches, locating my off-speed pitches, spotting my fastball, and not looking at it. You know, using the actual naked eye and how his body feels. And what's happened? His two best starts probably in the past 2 years. So it just goes to show the old school approach in baseball still works. Now, with that being said, the counter to that, right, is, you know, yeah, he didn't look at all analytics. He went to feel. You don't need to throw 100 miles an hour. And a guy on the other side of town, Carlos Rodon, who I still think Carlos Rodon is a fantastic pitcher, he's getting beat up again with the New York Yankees. And it's the first inning that's killing him. And he's getting clobbered in the first inning. So the New York Yankees are so heavily reliant on analytics. Matt Blake, their pitching coach, he's like a computer. Obviously very smart, you know, knows what he's doing, knows what he's talking about. But they, you know, the Yankees front office operates on a very heavy analytical approach, pitching and hitting. And it just has shocked me as a casual fan. Maybe I'm not a casual fan. Maybe I'm a freak fan. But I watched Rodon pitch a couple nights ago against the Tampa Bay Rays. And the Rays are, again, a very analytic-heavy organization as well. But Rodon cannot get out of the first inning without giving up three or four runs or at least five or six hard-hit balls. And that's been a common theme for him for probably the past 2 months. And it shocks me that the Yankees, with all this analytics, are still allowing him to throw to pound the zone with first-pitch fastballs. Yes, I'm a huge proponent of getting ahead, throwing strikes. It's important. But you have to be able to throw your secondary pitches for strikes to start a count as well. And Rodon, in the first inning, and just the example on against the Rays 2 nights ago, was Rodon's 9 of his first 14 pitches were four-seam fastballs, and he was grooving them. And by no surprise, the Rays were ready for it. Obviously, they had their scouting. They were ready for it, and they clobbered him. And Rodon adjusted and then started throwing his curveball and his slider, second inning, third inning, fourth inning, and throwing that for strikes, first pitches, and keeping guys off balance. It's all about keeping a hitter off balance. They will catch up to your fastball. I don't care how hard you throw it. So my question, and I think the thing that frustrated me with that, with the Rodon, is why is he not making adjustments? How are the Yankees, this analytic powerhouse, not making adjustments to what Rodon needs to do? And that's a feel thing. That's an eyesight thing. So there has to be that blend, because Rodon looks amazing innings 3 through 6. He's untouchable 3 through 7. It's those first 20, 25 pitches, whether that's scripted or not, that has to change, because the other teams are all over it, you know, in their scouting departments. And Rodon, you know, I'm really curious to see how he comes out his next start, because to see if he starts these guys off with some off-speed pitches and out of the zone, try to get some chase and keep guys off balance either way to set up that fastball. That's a nag. Listen, he throws 98 and it's a rising and he can spot it outside corner, but teams are on it when he's grooving at to get try to get ahead in the first inning. So that was just my take on that. You can be all analytical you want, but you got to have your eyes on the game. You got to have your eyes on these pitchers. The game plans. It can't just be just spit out by a computer, because hitters are too smart in the majors. And so that's my take on that this week. That's my hot take. That's my caffeine moment, my Celsius moment of the morning. That gets me fired up. But I'm so happy to see a crafty guy like Jose Quintana just be so successful. And not just because it's the Mets. Yes, I'm a Met fan, but to see a guy that can, you know, he throws strikes, you keep hitters off balance. And he was using his off-speed stuff to set up his fastball. Now, with that being said, right, Paul Skeens, Pittsburgh Pirates, freak of nature. I hope his arm does not blow out. This guy throws 102 miles an hour. He has got a sinker splinker. It's a sinker slash splitter, which means the ball looks like it's coming at you at 97 miles an hour fastball down the pipe, and boom, it just ducks left or right. And it is filthy. He was a number one overall draft pick last year out of LSU. He is the first ever pitcher in Major League history to be selected with the first pick in the first round and then go to the All-Star game the next year. Paul Skenes made the All-Star team. Paul Skenes needs to start this All-Star game. So I said I was going to touch a little bit on the All-Star game. I guess I'll just do it now. Paul Skenes, again, freak of nature. This is a guy that throws 102, but this is also a guy that has just absolute electric off-speed stuff. And he is he's more than what, at least what I thought he was going to be. I saw him pitch against the Mets. I saw him pitch the start before that with the Cardinals. He is just incredible the way he locates his fastball, but then he doesn't even throw his fastball all the time, 102. He throws that splinker, that sinker splitter for 95, 96 that is absolutely unhittable. You know, he can throw it for strikes, and then he can throw it to get you to chase. So talking about the All-Star game, yes, he was the first ever Major League player to be drafted, in one year, and then the following year makes the All-Star team, which is really, really impressive, especially with all the pitching in the game right now. And I think he needs to start this All-Star game. It'd be great for the game. The game's popularity is up right now. Major League Baseball had the highest attendance record in June since 2014. So baseball is very healthy. Again, I'll repeat that. And Major League Baseball attendance at games had its highest June attendance in 10 years. That's attributed, I think, to the pitch clock. I was always a guy that I think that's attributed to the pitch clock. You know, the attendance being so high, I think that, you know, that helps. But with such good attendance, there's so many more kids getting more, you know, obviously getting more involved, hopefully, in going to games. But when talking about this All-Star game with Paul Skenes, it would be great to see Paul Skenes, the rookie right-hander, go face Juan Soto, Aaron Judge, Gunnar Henderson. I think Gunnar Henderson is a shortstop, the starting shortstop for the American League. It might be Bobby Witt. Either way, if it's Bobby Witt and Aaron Judge and Juan Soto, the top three hitters in the lineup going against Paul Skenes, that is much must-watch TV if you're a baseball fan. That's the best idea. I think the idea of and I'm sorry, I had a little glitch there on my phone as I'm recording this again. So if there was a blank spot there when I hit pause, I was talking about Paul Skenes having to be starting this game, this All-Star game, because again, it's about the fans and people want to see Paul Skenes pitch. And who doesn't want to see Paul Skenes face Aaron Judge, the best hitter in baseball, Juan Soto, probably the second best hitter in baseball. They're both Yankees. And then Bobby Witt. I'm not sure if Gunnar Henderson from the Orioles is starting at shortstop or Bobby Witt from the Royals. Either way, if you got Witt or Henderson with Soto and Judge 1-2-3 in that lineup facing Paul Skenes, that is must watch TV. Anybody that follows baseball, even a casual fan, will want to see that because again, he is the best. He's already probably the hottest young pitcher in the game. He needs to start. That's another hot take. So that's, you know, the All-Star game will be fun. The Home Run Derby. My son is 7 years old. He can't wait for the Home Run Derby. So I am excited for him for that. It's going to be a lot of fun. You know, what goes on, you know, the red carpet, he's going to be into that. So I don't get into that. The one thing I could not believe as far as selections, right? I don't really care. I don't care who goes to the All-Star game. Again, that's the one thing. The only thing I care about is seeing Paul Skenes face these three guys. I hope that happens as a fan. But Pete Alonso, the Mets first baseman, he's a free agent at the end of the year. There's all this talk in New York. Are they going to sign him? Are they not going to sign him? He should be a Met for life, blah, blah, blah. I personally do not care if he is going to be a Met for life. The Mets have not won anything with him at first base. I feel like that's a position that can be replaced. And again, he's not having a great year. He's hitting 240. He's got 18 home runs. It's a good year. He's a good ball player. But there's a guy in Arizona named Christian Walker who is 34 years old. He was a grinder for about 8 years in the minors. I mean, he's been in the majors now 6 years. He's got a great glove. He's got, I think, 16, 17 home runs, a better average than Alonso. He's just had a better year than Pete Alonso, but he's not the sexier name than Pete Alonso, so I guess that's why Alonso goes. And again, that's why I don't get too caught up in the All-Star game, because guys that should be there are not there. And I do not think Pete Alonso belongs in the All-Star game. I think it's a big factor that he was only going to go to the Home Run Derby if he was in the All-Star game. So I think that helped with the selection. But again, it's the All-Star game is this weekend. It should be fun. I really don't care about it. I'm going to repeat it for the ninth time. I just want to see Paul Skeen start the game and hopefully start the game and face the three best hitters from the American League, which is Judge, Soto, and either Bobby Witt or Gunnar Henderson. I forget who's starting at shortstop. And then there's, you know, the other part of this weekend. I said the Home Run Derby. There's also the MLB All-Star Game features the MLB Futures Game. So the Futures Game is all the top prospects from around the league. They go, they get to show off their stuff. I mean, talk about Pete Alonso. He was part of that Futures Game. There's a lot of guys in this All-Star Game that were in that Futures Game, which started, I guess, about 8-9 years ago. And it's a great showcase for the young talent coming up in the minor leagues right now. And then also, as I mentioned, the Major League Draft, the Major League Draft was always in the beginning of June, second week of June. They now push it to All-Star Weekend, which I think is a great idea. As far as, you know, putting everything together, kind of, you're showcasing the young guys in the Futures Game, you're showcasing the stars of today, and then now you're going to go draft these guys from high school and college on the same weekend. A lot of guys in the game don't think it's the best thing because it kind of organizations are so focused now on the draft that they're not focused on the trade deadline, which is 2 weeks away, but these guys are pretty good at what they do. I really don't worry about them being able to multitask. The front office guys, they get paid a lot of money. But talking about the draft, a lot of good young talent coming, getting ready to get drafted. There's a lot of college talent, and it's pretty cool. Wake Forest, it was always, it's an annual powerhouse in college baseball. They're looking at like four young kids that could be drafted in the first round. Siever King, that third baseman, he's a top 20 guy. Chase Burns, a right-handed pitcher, he's probably the top-rated pitcher in the draft. If you don't want to include Jack Caglione as a pitcher, Jack Caglione is the stud out of Florida. I've talked about before, first baseman, left-hand pitcher. I think Jack's going to wind up being an everyday guy. But Wake Forest has got a ton of talent, so kudos to that program. But there's a lot of good young high school talent. There's a kid named Travis Bazana. Travis Bazana has a chance to be the first ever second baseman coming out of Oregon State. First ever second baseman drafted first in the Major League Draft, which is pretty cool. There's never been a second baseman drafted first. He may even shift over to third base when he gets selected and goes pro, but that would be pretty cool. And also the cool story with him is Travis Bazana is from Australia. Born and raised in Australia. He was a cricket player growing up, rugby player growing up, played baseball, but he's obviously just a super freak athlete. Really good chance he goes number one in the draft. So keep an eye on that. The Aussie, first ever. I'm going to have to go out on a limb and say first ever Aussie drafted first overall and first ever second baseman drafted first overall if Cleveland decides to go that route. Charlie Condon is an outfielder, third baseman from Georgia. That is an absolute stud. He's 6'6". He's over 220 pounds. He's a monster. And he just hits moonshots. And he's a great glove. So a lot to look forward to in the Major League Draft. I'm not going to really go too deep into it. I'll wait until the draft happens. My New York Mets are looking at another two-way guy from Oklahoma State, which should be really interesting to see. They have a two-way kid right now, Nolan McLean in AA, who's still playing two-way. I think eventually he's going to wind up being a pitcher, it looks like. But, this is David Stern's first draft as a general manager of the Mets. He has baseball development team underneath him. So we'll see what they kind of target as far as the athlete. Are they going to go for that explosive athlete? They're going to go more the baseball player? We'll see. But that's the fun part of looking at all that. And as we said, so All-Star Game coming up this weekend, halfway mark. I mentioned that too. In Major League Baseball, we are over, 162 games. All these teams now, 162 games in the season. All of these teams are well over 81 games played. Nothing really has surprised myself, at least. It's a long season. It's a gauntlet of a season. People, like the national media, the writers are all on the Yankees right now saying, oh, they're 6-16 in the last 22 games. They can't pitch anymore. They can't hit anymore. It's a long season. You know, the Yankees got off to an incredible start. There was going to be a stretch in the season, like there is for every single major league team, where they go through a rough stretch. The Yankees are in that stretch. Now, do the Yankees have the pitching to get them out? Gerrit Cole has still yet to establish himself as that elite starter again. He's coming off an injury. It's going to take time. He looked better in his last start. Again, I talked about Rodon. They have to make an adjustment with him in the first inning. And, you know, we'll see what happens. Marcus Stroman in that rotation, I've said this in day one. I've said it for the past 4 years. Whoever's getting Marcus Stroman is getting an all-star in the first half. In the second half, you're getting a guy with a 5 ERA and a horrible attitude. In the first half, you're getting a guy with, usually a sub-3 ERA with a horrible attitude. Now you got to do the horrible attitude with a 5 ERA. It's who Marcus Stroman is. That's that heavy sinker. His arm gets tired as the year goes on. So he throws a heavy ball. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe the second half he turns it on, but he's already trending in his past two starts to the second half, Marcus Stroman. So I'm not surprised by that at all. But again, Soto will hit. Judge will hit. They need some bullpen help. Clay, cardiac arrest. Holmes in the back of that bullpen. He shut it down against the Rays yesterday. They need help in the bullpen. But I can say probably for every single team that is positioned for the playoffs right now, they all need bullpen help. Everybody needs bullpen help. There's going to be sellers at the deadline. It's going to be very competitive to get bullpen help. You're going to have to give up assets. The team, I think, that is positioned the best to give up assets is the Baltimore Orioles. Their farm system, I think I've mentioned this before, but their mid-level guys in their farm system, their prospects, are better than half of the major league teams in Major League Baseball's top prospects. So, you know, I'd be shocked if Mike Elias doesn't make big moves for bullpen help to get with Kimbrel. I think Garrett Crochet from the White Sox is going to be a perfect fit for that team. I think he's kind of like my Andrew Miller pick. If you remember Andrew Miller from 2010 to 2019, he was that hybrid pitcher that can give you 2 to 3 innings. Crochet is a starter now, but I think he's going to have to go into a bullpen for a team just because of his innings issue and durability-wise, which he would be dynamite in a bullpen. But again, there's, you know, we talk about the contenders and the pretenders, you know, at the midseason point right now. The Orioles and the Yankees are going to be there. I you know, this whole Yankee, you know, it's more a New York media thing, I think, and there's some national media on it, but, you know, I would be stunned. And again, it's baseball. You don't know with baseball. You know, you can predict all you want, but the Yankees, I just think there's too much talent in that lineup. Especially with the two big guns. And I think Volpe will turn it around a little bit. We'll see. The Boston Red Sox have been just an incredible surprise. I've talked about the Red Sox before and the Red Sox being a team that is usually, you know, you go back to the Red Sox the past 20, 25 years, the past 10 years for that matter, the past 15 years. They're a team that you correlate the Red Sox with power hitters, doubles guys, and pitching, right? And the Red Sox now are probably the most athletic team in the major leagues. I'll repeat that. The Boston Red Sox may be the most athletic team in the major leagues. They put so much pressure on a defense. It's incredible. I love watching them now. Rafaela and Duran. I mean, yeah, they have their stud hitter, Rafael Devers, their third baseman. But that whole team, it's, I don't know if it's Cora. I mean, Cora's a great manager. We know that. But I don't know how quickly, because Craig Breslow came in as the general manager, president of baseball operations this past winter. So this didn't happen overnight. This was a plan I think they had, you know, going. And I think now Breslow has run with it. Theo Epstein is with the Red Sox again. But he's by all accounts, he's very hands-off with Breslow right now. Craig Breslow, you know, who heads up the whole operation for the Red Sox. He's a Yale guy. You talk about a blend of analytics and scouting. You know, he went to Yale, wildly brilliant guy, pitched in the major leagues for 10 years, crafty left-hander, and then went to go work with the Cubbies for a while. I've actually had a chance to meet Craig Breslow a few times when he was still pitching. just through acquaintances. This was back in my active drinking days. So I had a couple cocktails with Craig Breslow, but I'm really happy to see him in the Red Sox. The Red Sox, they're 9 games over 500. And, you know, they're technically only 3 games behind the Yankees in the loss column. So they're 4.5 games back total in the wild card from the Yankees. But the Red Sox are right now, the season ended, they're in the playoffs. And they're probably going to add. You know, the Tampa Bay Rays, I'm looking at them right now, and they're 2 games under 500. I can't believe they're 2 games under 500. I thought the Rays were probably like 10 games under 500. And just, I understand they're 2 under, but when I watch them play, you're like, oh man, they're just missing some pieces. But they just continue to win games. They hover around 500. They just traded Phil Maton to the Mets, a reliever. It just goes to show that the confidence that they have, the Rays, in their development of their own players. They can send. He's not a high leverage reliever, Phil Maton, but he's going to help the Mets a lot more than he was helping the Rays, and that just goes to speak to the Rays' talent and depth. So I don't, but again, I can't imagine the Rays being there at the end of the year. But again, also wouldn't surprise me. The contender, I think they're more of a pretender. You know, contenders are in the Central, definitely the Guardians. I mean, wow, the best record in the American League right now. Is it? I think it might be the best. Is it the best record in baseball right now? They are not. So the Phillies still own that best record in baseball. But the Cleveland Guardians, 57-34. Steven Vogt, manager, great job. They pitch, they play defense. And they will pop. I don't know how much they're going to have to add. They have a great bullpen there. So it's going to be interesting to see with them. The Twins are right on their tail as far as 5 games out. They're in the wild card hunt. My Royals, they're still contenders, man. They just swept the Cardinals, who were a hot baseball team, in a doubleheader yesterday. So the Royals are sitting 8 games over 500. Nobody predicted this. So either way, it's been a nice turn of foot for the Royals organization after losing 100 games last year. You know, they're well on their way to over 80 wins. And I think if I mentioned a couple times, I cash in on that once they get over 74 wins. So they are they're well on their way for me to cashing a bet for the first time ever on sports. I am the mush when it comes to baseball and football. So that they're still contenders. You know, the Tigers, White Sox, no shot. And the AL West, you know, I've been talking about the Mariners, pitching. They have it. Don't have much offense. They had a 10-game lead in the middle of June over the Astros. The Astros now are only 2 games back. The Houston Astros are back. They're 48-44. They were 10 games under 500. I wrote them off in May just because of all the injuries that they've had. And they have withstood it. And first-year manager Joe Espada, guy, you know, was getting his feet wet. I mean, talk about injuries and things being thrown at you. Alex Bregman got off to a slow start. He is now on fire. They got Yordan Alvarez coming back. They got Verlander coming back. I don't know what kind of version you're going to get of Verlander. But they have good young pitching, and they have a shutdown bullpen that's now healthy and pitching like they should be with Josh Hader, Ryan Presley, Brian Abreu. It's scary that the Astros can just flip the switch like that. They are contenders. They're going to be players in that wild card race. The Texas Rangers are 44-49. They also have guys coming back. I just don't know what they're going to get from DeGrom. You know, what they're going to get from Tyler Molly when he comes back. What they're going to get from Corey Bradford. They have Scherzer back, but Max Scherzer is a shell of what he used to be. It's the name. It's not that same guy. And those numbers on the back of his baseball card from 4 years ago. So the American League in a nutshell, contenders, pretenders, halfway mark. You know, I had the Mariners go into the playoffs. I had the Yankees, the Orioles. You know, the Guardians are the surprise, and they are strong contenders, and they will be there. As far as the National League goes, Phillies, you know, class of the National League right now. You know, Zach Wheeler went down with a back injury 2 days ago. I haven't heard any updates on that. He went 5 innings. It could have just been more precautionary because they were up by 7 runs in that game. But Phillies are the class. Dave Dombrowski, general manager there, you know, wheels and deals. He's done a great job. I mean, a lot of teams bring in these big free agent tickets meaning players, and they spend all money, and it doesn't work out. He signed guys, and they have worked out. He's made trades. Brandon Marsh worked out. Edmundo Sosa. These are the guys that are, you know, the in-betweener guys, the role players, and those trades have worked out phenomenally. He brought back Nola, pitched great, you know. And so the Phillies, with obviously Bryce Harper, Trey Turner, Alec Bohm, you know, they have JT Realmuto, who's out right now, and yet he'll be back. They're still winning games. They're 60-32. You know, they're almost 30 games over 500. And you know they're 100% contender. The Atlanta Braves are 8.5 games behind them, but the Braves are number one in the 3-team wild card. Braves have lost Acuna, Spencer Strider, but yet they still continue to win. You lose your best hitter and your best pitcher. You know, I know in New York it would be doom and gloom, and well, at least with the Mets. But you know, the Yankees did withstand no Cole, so that's why again I go back to the Yankees. They're gonna be okay. But with the Braves, just a juggernaut of an organization. You know, they just plug and play. They picked up Jared Kelenic in the offseason from the Mariners, who was a number one overall pick from the Mets, who was traded for Edwin Diaz 4 years ago. Kelenic just, you know, couldn't really put it together in Seattle. He's a Wisconsin kid, drafted sixth overall in 2018 by the Mets out of high school, and, you know, super prospect, super stud, just couldn't put it together in Seattle. Atlanta got him, and he has turned out to be a revelation there. You know, he's not a superstar there yet, but he fits in good there because he doesn't need to be the superstar there. They got Matt Olson. They got Austin Riley. They have Sean Murphy, you know, Michael Harris. Marcelo Ozuna has 75 RBIs this year. He's leading the National League in RBIs. This guy 2 years ago was going to be, you know, they signed him to a four-year, $50 million extension. It was called a four-year, $80 million, I think. It was called the worst extension ever just because he got in trouble with the law. He wasn't hitting fastballs. Now he's back, 75 RBIs. So kudos to the Braves. They are definitely contenders. And now I look at the third place New York Mets, one game over 500. I've been saying it all year. They are a 500 team. I do not think otherwise. I think they have done a phenomenal job of staying afloat. You know, they're a half game out of the wild card. I'm a big Met fan. I'm obviously a jaded Met fan, but I'm also realistic. You know, listen, Carlos Mendoza, great job. You know, he put Lindor up to the top of the lineup, and you know, you hear New York media, how do you put a $300 million player as leadoff? Well, I don't know. The Los Angeles Dodgers do it with Mookie Betts, and that seems to work out pretty well. So, and it worked out really well. It's worked out really well. I think it's a combination of things. I think it's a combination of Lindor. I think it's a combination of Brandon Nimmo becoming a leader on that team. And, you know, the starting pitching has done well, has pitched above what you would expect. So they get Kodai Senga back. I mean, that's quote-unquote a trade deadline acquisition off the IL. You kind of consider that. I just don't see the Mets better than 500. But now 500 might get them into the playoffs. So because the National League is much more watered down than the American League is. So the Mets are kind of I don't even know how to call them, pre-contenders, pretender contenders. They're right on that bubble. Even if they make the playoffs, I don't see much of a run. I don't see David Stearns making big moves at the deadline. I think his moves will come in the offseason via free agency because the Mets have money coming off the books and Uncle Steve will look to spend some money. But I don't look at them as contenders or pretenders. I look at them as staying afloat and more to be revealed. Maybe that's a chicken shit way of making a prediction because I just don't know. You know, they're a 500 team, which I've said since day one, and they are 46-45. So they are exactly where I thought they would be. The Milwaukee Brewers in the Central playing really good ball, playing above their heads still, 54-39. They catch the ball. They are 5.5 games over the St. Louis Cardinals, who have made a really nice comeback this season, had a horrible April, really bad beginning of May, and then since June have the best record, second or third best record in baseball with the Mets. With the Mets, the Red Sox, and the Astros. So those four teams have really turned it around. Cardinals would be right there. Cardinals are technically in the playoffs right now in that third wild card. They have veteran pitching. The Cardinals are a 162-game season kind of team. With that veteran pitching, they will be able to withstand this gauntlet of 162. They are contenders. And then right below them, the Pittsburgh Pirates. I just talked about Paul Skenes. I mean, it's so much fun to watch him pitch. They have another kid there named Jared Jones. Jared Jones is just as good as Paul Skenes, not as good, but he is a 1A to his 1. Jones is on the injured list right now. He'll be back after the All-Star break. I would love to see the Pittsburgh Pirates go all in, go get a big bat. I don't know what big bats are going to be available. That's the whole thing with this playoff structure is that teams think they're still in it, and when they're really not. So I don't know what the Pirates can really do, but I can tell you that the Pirates – and the Nationals, for that matter, who I skipped over to the National League East, they are going to be players next year with their young talent. The Nationals have got a ton of talent coming. That Juan Soto trade for the Nationals yielded amazing results. Mackenzie Gore, great lefty. CJ Abrams, James Wood is up now. And boy, is he a super freak. And then Robert Hassel's coming soon. But the point is Mike Rizzo did a great job with the Nationals. They've also played very well this year, even though they're now 9 games under 500. that young talent will be is coming. They are going to be players next year, as are the Pirates. So the Pirates, again, the Pirates are right there. They're only four games under 500. I would call them a little more pretenders right now. I think they're next year is when they make their big run. Cubs and Reds. Reds, I've been really disappointed. I thought they were going to be – I had them going to the playoffs, I believe, in the beginning of the year. So they're 10 out. They're only 3.5 games out of the wild card. I mean, and they're five games under 500. So anything can happen in the second half. We have still close to 75 games left. And with those 75 games left, we talk about the NL West. You know, the Dodgers are 7.5 games up on the Padres. The Dodgers, though, I mean, again, money cannot buy world championships. The Dodgers should win the West now, but, you know, this team is going to have to look drastically different in October than it looks now, because you have the Japanese sensation is injured. I just totally drew a blank on his name. But you know, Tyler Glasnow just went down. He was their big trade from the Tampa Bay Rays. And Glasnow was an all-star. He was throwing amazing. Just another guy, though, who's injured every year. Max effort, 100 miles an hour, snaps off a breaking ball, 94 miles an hour. They're saying it's his lower back, at least it's not his arm. But again, it's just that max effort. There's something that will go. And Glasnow is the poster boy for amazing talent that just they don't ever pull back on him. You gotta hope it's not too serious, but they're gonna need him, you know, for the playoff stretch, that the next gauntlet after the regular season. Yamamoto is the name of the pitcher, the Japanese pitcher. You know, they're saying it's a capsule strain in his shoulder. Who knows? You know, that's what they said about Kodai Senga with the Mets in spring training. It was only gonna be, you know, a month or so. He hasn't pitched in 4 months almost now. Capsule strains are tricky, especially with these Japanese guys who are not used to this rigorous schedule, this rigorous, you know, turns through a rotation that Major League Baseball compared to them in Japan. So it'll be interesting to see with them. The Padres, I mean, listen, they got Luis Arraez. They picked up Dylan Cease during the season. You know, AJ Preller, the general manager, he's going to make deals at the deadline. They're two games over. They're in the playoffs right now, two games over 500. They're in the playoffs right now. They're going to be fun to watch. They're going to be must-watch. Still, so they'll be there. They're contenders. The Diamondbacks, a game under. I know the Diamondbacks last year were probably right. Diamondbacks were actually worse last year than they are now. I just don't know if the Diamondbacks are the same team, because Corbin Carroll has not been the same Corbin Carroll in that lineup. Christian Walker has been amazing. I talked about him. He should be an all-star first base over Pete Alonso. Their pitching staff has been, you know, just an injury nightmare as well. They're getting Jordan Montgomery back. They haven't had Eduardo Rodriguez all year, and he was their big pickup in the offseason. He's a lefty. He's crafty. He is good, and they're supposed to get him back. So that could change a lot. Merrill Kelly has been on the injured list. He's coming back. So the Diamondbacks could be right there. So they're kind of like the Mets. They're kind of like my pre-contenders, meaning pretenders, contenders. I don't know. The Giants, they're an enigma, and the Rockies suck. So that's kind of your quick overview. You know, everything really has not changed too much. You know, no huge, really big surprises. I'd say the two big surprises are in the Central Division in each league. The Brewers in the National League and the Guardians in the American League. You know, kudos to them, and we'll see if they can keep that up. I saw a pretty cool stat talking about, you know, pitching and talking about the money thrown at pitching and the older pitchers. And, you know, the six highest paid starting pitchers this year will make $233 million in total this year. Six guys will make $233 million total dollars, not each, but total. And the list is Max Scherzer, who just came off the IL. He's made four starts, I believe. Justin Verlander, who is on the IL. Jacob DeGrom hasn't made a start yet this year. Gerrit Cole, who is made about four starts this year. Patrick Corbin, who was on the Nationals and just pitched against the Mets last night. Didn't pitch bad, but Patrick Corbin has been a disaster since they signed him to that six-year, $170 million contract. And the unofficially retired Steven Strasburg, who got, I think, 6 years, $250 million, and has thrown about zero pitches since signing that extension 3 years ago after they won the World Series. They have that group with $233 million, they have six wins total on the year. Six total, not each, total six wins. So that's giving out big money to these older pitchers. I think it's going to become less and less common. It is becoming less and less common. Steve Cohen tried to buck that trend by giving Verlander and Scherzer a ton of money. We saw how that worked out. So, you know, we saw this last offseason, Jordan Montgomery couldn't even secure a long-term deal for big bucks. A lot of these guys had to sign one-year deals, prove-it deals, and they're not proving it. So Blake Snell, who won a Cy Young last year, and he's, you know, he's still a relatively young guy, 31 years old. He couldn't sign until spring training, and he's on the IL. So it just goes to show that it's going to be, again, this game is going younger and younger. The money's going to be put toward younger and younger. I just thought that was an interesting stat, because once this collective bargaining agreement comes up in 2027, it's going to be a lot of talk of a salary cap. There's going to be a lot of talk of, you know, the money that's going to the younger guys. They have to start paying these guys, you know, before, which a lot of organizations are doing. They're paying them before. They're not paying them for what they did. Because by the time a lot of these guys get to 28, 29, 30 years old, these analytics, Ivy League dorks are saying that, you know, their value is not as strong, which is valid. But baseball always was a sport where you were paid for what you did, and then, you know, then you get paid into your 30s. So we'll see how that goes. You know, a lot going on in Major League Baseball. All is really healthy in the game. I can't believe I've already been talking for 40 minutes, and my equipment on my phone didn't go to crap. Just really quick on horse racing. Yeah, it's mid-season for horse racing. It's not an all-star break for horse racing, and it's but you know, for as far as the three-year-old campaign goes, it's mid-season. The Haskell is going to be at Monmouth Park. Fierceness is going to be there alongside Mindframe. The Belmont Stakes winner, Dornock, will be there as well. So that is going to be a lot of fun, that race to watch in 2 weeks at Monmouth Park. And Saratoga, opening day today, baby. A lot of feelings, emotions for Saratoga opening day. The whole meet is incredible. It's 7 weeks or 8 weeks. I don't even, wait, what day is it? It's 6 weeks, I guess you could say. 8 weeks of just amazing horse racing, amazing people, amazing food, amazing memories are made. Just for me, going from being on a van, going from Finger Lakes Racetrack in college for John Progno on a horse that was running in the Alabama, being in the van and going to taking that five-hour van ride with the horse, being in the back of the van with the horse and taking that ride and, you know, that experience was like no other, that I continued to do it from Philadelphia Park up to Saratoga with a couple other trainers' horses. Bobby Kamak, I would go up there with a couple of his horses they would send me up with. And I was the guy on the van with the horse. I was the groom. And, you know, that was really where my love started for these animals. A little bit before that, as I've touched on many times. But Saratoga gives me those memories. Saratoga gives me memories of meeting great people as well throughout my time in college there, you know, working up there on short stints with horses, going up to run and then going back. But met great people. It brings back memories of my third date with my wife. I brought her up to Saratoga. I was like, "Oh, she likes Saratoga. She's a keeper." And she loved it, and she still loves it, which I think she still loves it. She tells me she does. So, but, you know, those dates, we spent 4 days up there right before we got married. So those memories, and then now memories of bringing my kids up there. And those memories are going to continue, you know, as we go and raise our children. They will be up there quite a bit, just not this summer. There's too much other things going on. But, and then now currently for me as an owner, you know, being involved with Centennial Farms, I'm starting my own stable as well, very quietly, very quietly is the best way to put it. You know, it's baby steps right now. It's Diamond Elite Racing Stable is going to be the name, but running under the Centennial umbrella, you know, following Don Little's footsteps, because, you know, you surround yourself with good people, with smart people that are successful in an industry and are respected. I'm following his lead. So, you know, currently, you know, my excitement for Saratoga is, yeah, we have horses running up there with Centennial. We got a horse in on Saturday, Illuminaire. He won his first time out on Belmont weekend. So he is, he's geared up, ready to a tough race on Saturday. But, you know, he ran dynamite in his first start in that win, Belmont weekend. So expect him to run strong. Will he win? No idea. No idea if he's going to win, but expect a good effort. So excited for that. Excited. We have two-year-olds up there now. More two-year-olds going up. Some of the veteran horses are coming off the farm and going up. War Officer, Meteorite, Enlightened, who's still only 3 years old. He ran four times as a two-year-old. We gave him time off. So a lot of exciting things from a personal standpoint, the investment in the game. Going to be up there as well for the sales, the yearling sales, to restock the roster You know, invest in that with Centennial, but I'm going to be part of it as far as being there with them. Really excited for that experience, and to continue to grow my knowledge for this aspect of the game. And then for the Belmont Child Care Association dinner at the end of August, you know, it's a great fundraiser. Last year, I think we raised over $4 million. It was somewhere. I could be off on that, so don't quote me, but it was a lot. And we beat, you know, it was the highest we've ever raised. Maybe it was like 1.8 or 2, I don't know. But Don will correct me when the FEFT listens to this, and I'll update it. I'll certainly will talk about it more as we get toward the end of August, but that's going to be great. And then Travers, you know, that's during Travers week. So Ariane and I will be up there for the whole week. Antiquarian will not be running that week. He is still on the mend, doing amazing at the farm. You know, just getting that R&R right now. You know, came off a very minor surgery on his knee, but nothing crazy at all. And, you know, just basically just a tune up now and, you know, out and grazing and relaxing, and we'll be back to the races for sure. But he won't be at the Travers, that's for sure. But the Travers will be fun. You know, there's going to be some horses from the Belmont that'll be there. But again, I'll talk about that as we get closer to that. Right now, the meet has just begun. And, you know, one of the bigger things now, it's the two-year-old season is about to start. The freshmen that are going to be aiming for the Run for the Roses for next year. And there's the Sanford Stakes is this Saturday. And that's basically the first of the big two-year-old stake races. And Fierceness, who is a top three-year-old right now, his full brother, Menti, is a two-year-old out of the same stallion, City Light, out of the same mare. Menti, trained by Todd Pletcher, owned by Mike Rapoli. He actually broke a track record at Aqueduct a month ago, going 5 furlongs. So just like his brother, superstar in the making, and he's going to be running in the Sanford. That's on Saturday. So keep an eye on that. It's going to be a lot of fun. And then, you know, then we got the Jim Dandy after that, after the Sanford as well, coming up in 2 weeks. That's another three-year-old big race. So a lot of fun. A lot of love up there. I can't wait to get up there. You know, we have Leo's birthday this next week, so we're going to do a little birthday party for him this weekend. That's why I won't be in Saratoga. Obviously, my son's birthday comes first. And then we're actually going to be going down to Miami. Leo and I are going to catch a Mets-Marlins game. And I'm going to catch up with some friends down there in Palm Beach, and it's going to be great. You know, it's summertime. Kids are having a blast. Everything else is really, really good. You know, we talk about this. I talk about the Stretch Run podcast and trying to get out a message of sobriety too. It's just, I get caught up in the baseball and the horse racing. But you know, I don't have this life right now that I'm doing as far as, you know, working with doctors and doing some stuff with restaurants and doing the horses now too. And then, you know, getting into this podcast when I can. I don't have any of this without my sobriety. So that's first things first every day for me. And I have an amazing group of guys here now in Kansas City. I am blessed that I have gentlemen that are in New York and Florida that I talk to every day as well, that we're all in the same, we all have the same common mission each day. And that's to live our best life and to help others to the best of our ability. So, you know, my sobriety game is still going strong, and that's the most important game, because I'm able then to give myself to my family first. I give myself to myself first, and then ultimately can give the best version of myself to my family. So with that said, with that sappy ending, life is good. I hope everybody has a fantastic weekend. Let's go Saratoga, all-star game again. Paul Skeens hopefully starting the game. Let's go!